It's showtime. That's right. Friday night, 6 p.m. Here we are. Teron Davenport, Nate Washington. Nate, what's going on, my guy?
Man, you got it, TV. Ready for the bounce back this week, man. Coming off a tough loss, but I'm ready for the guys to bounce back this week.
Huh. Maybe for one of these bumps, I probably should have put that James Brown big payback on there.
true indeed.
Yeah, so this game, I know it was extra interesting for you. Obviously, you have been on both sides of this party. And I just think when you look back at this game, it was a tale of two halves. That's really what it breaks down to. And I don't know, man. The way they came out against the Steelers, it left a lot to be desired. They had the ball. Do you realize in that first quarter, they had the ball for 1 minute, 21 seconds, and no team in the National Football League has had the ball for that little bit of time in a quarter this season?
Well, that's the thing that stuck out to me kind of from this game. You know, the assessment of it was pretty much the way I thought it would go. I knew for a fact that, you know, just the tradition of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin continuing on that mentality, I knew that it would be a tough, you know, first half for the Titans. I knew that the Titans would definitely come into this mentality of not wavering away from their game plan and doing what they do best and what they're built to do, and that's run the ball and be physical on offense. But, you know, I was definitely expecting that Pittsburgh Steelers defense to come out and have their ears pinned back and ready for the quest ahead of them. But this is the thing that definitely surprised me. I was expecting the Pittsburgh Steelers offense to have, you know, a high attack in the passing game, but their time of possession, as you stated, was just dumbfounding. For them to be able to make the plays in the air and still withhold the time of possession throughout the first quarter.
It was just crazy how they had that time of possession throughout the first quarter. And then it even carried over into the second quarter. And the thing that was crazy for me in watching that was 14-0, Arthur Smith still stuck to the run. And I give him credit for that. And that's something that he continues to do, because a lot of times you'll see coordinators just completely abandon their plan. It's like the Mike Tyson saying, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Well, the Titans had a plan. They got punched in the mouth, but they still stuck with that plan. So I give them credit for that. It was something really good just to be able to see them try to work their way back. But one of the things that really, really cost the Titans was the third down situation. And I think that's something that has to be focused on. We're talking about 72% conversions for the Steelers on third downs. 13 out of 18 conversions. That's just crazy. And that was, I want to say, the fourth highest percentage that any team had in converting third downs this season. By the way, the second highest was 76%. Guess who had that? The Bills against the Titans, 13 out of 17. That's an issue that they have to figure out. They have to work that out. But it's unfortunate because you can't really put a finger on it, because the guys up front, they're trying to get home. They're trying to match hands with the quarterback and get their hands up. And it's happening at times with Jeffrey Simmons. And then at the same time, the guys in the secondary, they're trying to cover and try to make it easier for them. But it's just not working. And they have to get things hand in hand. So I think, you know, when you look at these third downs, Nate, that's something that just it has to get better, the third downs.
Yeah, definitely. And I apologize about my disconnection. But, you know, that's definitely where I was headed with my conversation. Just the Steelers' ability to withhold the time of possession from the Titans due to the fact that they were able to convert on, you know, difficult third down situations must be corrected. You know, even in the situation where it was third and long and the Titans would like to love to play zone defense, but, you know, to be able to sit on the sticks and make a play in front of the sticks is important, and they weren't able to do that. So definitely going to have to find a way to get off the field on third down, and somebody's definitely going to have to make a play.
Excellent point about making plays in front of the sticks, because, yeah, Roethlisberger was throwing the ball within 2 seconds, and that's fine and dandy, but you can only run so far within 2 seconds. So they catch that football, you got to get on them and bring them down. And that's something that has to happen. But it's not just us, right? We're watching it, and we're noticing what's happening with the third downs. I asked Jeffrey Simmons. Like, Jeffrey Simmons had to answer it, too. And we as media, we've been asking all of the defensive players that. Here's what Jeffrey Simmons had to say when he was asked about the third down struggles.
It's come down to two things, I think, especially on third down. We have to rush better, and we have to cover better. That's pretty much what it is. I think it's you can't get frustrated. I mean, it's like during the game, it's like, all right, guys, let's get it going. We got to go to field, especially if we want to win games, especially against good teams. But like I said, it's come down to how we're going to rush, how we're going to coordinate our rush games or whatever we're doing on third down. And just on the back end, how they're going to cover better. And, you know, I think if they covering better, we're going to rush better. If we rush better, they cover better. So, I said, it just come down to them two things. And I think this week right here is going to be a good week that we could try to go out there and, you know, show that we could do better on third down. Every week we come in, we want to talk about third down. We're talking about third down every week. So, I mean, this week, like, we say it's kind of the same thing. You know, we're saying that we're going to be better this week. But, you know, that's in the past. You know, we're not focused on what we did last week on third down. How can we do better this week on third down to get better as a team on third down? So
that's it right there. He said it, right? Front end and back end. It's all together collectively. There's a failure. So I appreciate him, you know, being honest with that. But I want to get back to the back end. And Nate, the off covers, we're seeing that a lot. Why is that hurting the Titans so much?
Well, here's the thing that I'm seeing, unfortunately. And, you know, I've said plenty of times on this show, you know, I've sat in that locker room, so I understand the media side of it and things that could be said sometimes. But also being on this side, you have to address the elephant in the room. And what I see is the lack of confidence that this coaching staff has in the secondary. You have a situation where, you know, you have some great guys, the ability to play, but, you know, you see very little of press coverage. And without the tight coverage on receivers, these quarterbacks are just having the confidence in the opposing quarterbacks are having the confidence in their receivers to just put the ball in the air and allow them to make the plays. But here it is, if these DBs can't play tight coverage, then the pass rush will never get home. You know, we stated that this quick game is going to affect this Titans defense, but the inability for these guys to not press and not play tight coverage initially is going to hurt them schematically. Already, it doesn't matter, you know, if they're going to be tight on the back end or not, because schematically they're put in a situation where they're playing a lot of zone. That entails a lot of backed off coverage. Now you're looking at a situation where if I'm an opposing coach, if I'm an opposing quarterback, if I'm an opposing receiver, all I'm thinking to myself is, okay, well, let me get a drag route and let me see what I can do with it after that. Let me get a slant route. Let me see what I can do with it after that. And then here it is, you know, those little plays and those little throws come into impact the later on ability to take a shot down the field. And that's exactly what's happening in these situations. I definitely expected it, you know, with the situation last week, but with Ben Roethlisberger. But, you know, to be completely honest, I'm pretty sure that every team will pretty much come in with the same mentality to have quick game, get the ball out of their hands fast, and allow their playmakers on the outside to make plays.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that about the confidence. And that's something that I've said as well. Unfortunately, the trust level is just not there. It's not there. So that also, Nate, you know what else that's impacting? Their ability to blitz. Because when you don't trust your guys on the outside, you're not going to send more than one guy, if that, because that's going to open up things in the secondary as far as coverage is concerned. So that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. And I think, you know, it goes back to what we said about being able to make plays before the sticks as well, because if you're going to be playing off coverage, if you're going to be playing zone even, you have to still be able to bring the receiver down before he can get the first down. You have to get into your drops correctly. That third down conversion of Eric Ebron going from the right side of the formation to the left, like right around that left hash and catching that ball, that was too easy.
Yeah. I totally agree with you there, TD. And I would also allude to even when the game was on the line in the last drive for the Pittsburgh Steelers, although they made an excellent play in the back of the end zone to create a turnover, it was the third down conversion for me with Juju Schuster that was kind of confusing. It was about, you know, third and seven or so, and the Titans were sitting 2 yards behind the sticks. And when they come up to make the play, you're going to have a collision right at the sticks, as of where, you know, even if you want to play a little more confident with your guys, they have to be cognizant that these guys only need 4 yards or 7 yards or so to get a first down. And you can't be sitting 2 yards behind the sticks. If anything, you have to be sitting right at the first down yard marker so that you can make the play in front of the yard marker, not at the yard marker.
Exactly. So, man, we said a lot, but there's a lot that needs to be said, and obviously it's going to be a little bit, you know, I'm not going to say more difficult, but it's going to be a little bit of a challenge this week going against Tyler Boyd and A.J. Green and T. Higgins, and they could be without, they're already without Christian Fulton. They could be without Ty Smith. Jonathan Joseph did practice today. We're still waiting to see what's going to happen with Adoree Jackson, who did not practice today. He practiced on Friday last week. So it's going to be a challenge. And we'll get into that a little bit later, Joe Burrow and that passing game, because they present an issue. This guy's a FedEx. He was the FedEx Offensive Player of the Week as far as the air is concerned. So, yeah, they're ready to go. And it's not a game that should be taken lightly. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to get into the passing game for the Titans, because I think it's time that we address whether or not Ryan Tannehill is elite. We'll be right back.
Doing nothing. Moving too fast, candy paint with the windows all black, seats creme brulee.
What they all right, say? Nate and TD. Top down, screaming money. Hey, my guy. Up till 6 in the morning. That one's for you.
Yeah. I appreciate that. That's real smooth right there, TD.
Hey, man, you got that retweet, that quote tweet, yeah. So you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, I've been working on that for quite some time now, you know what I'm saying? So we got to get it together, man. I appreciate that.
The persistence will pay off, man. Speaking of being persistent and working at things for some time, Ryan Tannehill, this is a guy that, I will be honest, a little over a year ago, if you would have told me that Ryan Tannehill and elite would be in the same sentence, I would have told you need to put not in front of elite. But I think a good case could be made for him being an elite quarterback.
Well, here's the thing, you know, I've seen, and I think, you know, I think a lot of people can even Google this, but I've played with a lot of quarterbacks throughout my time. And, you know, you always see the reason why they're professionals. You always see, you know, the good in the arm. You always see the ability to make the big throws. But, you know, you very often see guys get in the system that will allow them to excel. You know, a lot of guys are placed in systems that, you know, don't necessarily match their tools or what their capability or the ability that they have. And here it is, you know, Ryan has found a system that allows his ability to flourish. He does an awesome job of, he throws a good ball, first of all, let me say that. He definitely throws a good ball. He definitely always puts the ball in the catchable region for the receiver, tight end, whoever it may be. But his ability now to make plays with his legs and do those things is complementary not only to this run game in the Titans, but also the play-action game that they have. A lot of times teams' defenses are in retreat when they're in that play-action mode. And even in that retreat time, when he sees them bail out of there and they may drop under his cover, his routes, he definitely does a great job of making plays with his legs as well. So it's just a unique position that he's in right now to have an offensive coordinator like Art Smith and a coach like Coach Vrabel that understands what he does best and puts him in the best position to allow this team to accomplish their goal, and that's to win. He does a great job of taking care of the ball. His turnover percentage is very low, and he does exactly what this coaching staff asks of him. So, you know, you have some great playmakers on the outside with A.J., Corey, and Adam. Great tight end. You just let those guys make the plays, and that's exactly what Ryan is doing.
It's amazing how being in the right scheme, the right system that matches you, can really showcase you. And this is something that early in Tannehill's career, like, there was a stretch where with the Dolphins, he was pretty good. And that was right. with Zach Taylor, coincidentally, as his quarterback coach as well as offensive coordinator, different roles throughout that time, starting with being the assistant QB coach. And we got the chance to talk to Zach Taylor, and he kind of touched on some of the things that happened when Tannehill first got to the Dolphins. But then he echoed what you said as far as the scheme being right for him, and then he had something to say about confidence. Check this out.
Okay.
All right, we'll get that in 1 second. Zach Taylor, he spoke about him glowingly, you know, and it's good to hear a guy be able to do that. Let's go back to it. Check it out.
Yes, it did. You know, we were together for 8 years, four at A&M and four at Miami. And certainly for a rookie to come in and already know everything about the offense from day one helped him play fast right out the gate, you know. And so he very well may have won the job anyway had it been a new offense. I think that he was ready for that. But of course, just his familiarity with the offense allowed him to come in day one and be able to instruct some of the veteran players, you know, on some of the nuances of the offense, which right out the gate gives them confidence in you.
So that's him talking about A&M, but then he also talked a little bit about just what Tannehill is doing in Arthur Smith's scheme as well as the confidence. Well, let's check that out.
I've always had a lot of confidence in him. He's always been a really good quarterback, and experience always helps, you know, and you know, you probably are a much better player in year 7 or 8 than you would be in year 4 just because of all the experience you've been through. And again, it's no surprise that he has helped the team get to where they're at. But again, they've got a really impressive coaching staff. They got really impressive talent. And they've done a good job managing all that over the last year and a half.
So here's what he said about Arthur Smith. He said, I think Arthur Smith has really done a good job in the last 2 years just watching him. It's a team that you study a lot because they've got good pieces to it, but it's also well-constructed and puts players in great position. It keeps you off balance defensively, and you could tell that Ryan's got full control of it, a lot of confidence. That's tough to compete with sometimes. So it echoes what you were saying, just in regards Correct. To being in the right scheme and how that will impact a guy's confidence and his performance.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think, you know, just as a player, as a coach, that's exactly what you see in this situation, because it was, and it's a lot, you know, reminiscent of the thoughts that I had about when Marcus Mariota left last year from the Titans. You know, you just get a guy that has unique ability, talent, but just not in the right spot. You know, I've seen guys also away from the scheme, you know, their games also be deterred by, you know, environment. You know, maybe a beef with a coach, maybe a beef with another player or whatever situation may be. But you get a guy in the right environment with the coaching staff and a scheme that believes in him and an environment that allows him to flourish with teammates that believe in his ability, man, you'll see sky's the limit for a guy, you know. And I think this is just truly the situation here where you're dealing with a fresh start, a guy that was in a situation, had some ability, transformed from a different position, but also had some ability at this quarterback position, but you never saw the best of him because of whatever was going on, you know, down in Miami. But now he's being in Tennessee. It's obvious that this guy has found a home, and this home is welcoming to him, and Ryan definitely fits into the scheme that the Titans want to get accomplished.
And for the folks that like numbers, right, I think top five is a legitimate way to define a guy being ultra elite. And if you look at, there's some different measurables that I found in an article I did for ESPN.com. And QBR, Ryan Tannehill has the fifth best QBR since he took over in week 7 over the last 16 games. Because now the whole, they need more games to figure him out and see how he is once teams do figure out. That's thrown out. You have a full season now. So he's fifth in – go ahead.
No, I'm listening.
He's fifth in QBR. He's third in completion percentage. He's first in yards per attempt. He is 12th in passing yards. So there can be some improvement there. And then when you look at touchdown to interception ratio, he's fifth. So he ranks in the top five in some pretty significant statistics. And then if you look at red zone, we've exhausted how well they've done in red zone. But just to give you one more number, he's 77% completions in the red zone. And he has the third most touchdowns in the red zone dating back to week seven, you know, the last 16 games.
Amazing. You know, those numbers in itself, the two that sticks out to me is the red zone numbers and the turnover numbers. You know, as a quarterback, your first and only job a lot of times is to protect the ball. You know, you're always going to touch the ball. You're always going to be the guy on the offense that's obviously the ball is going to go through his hands. So fumbles, interceptions, anything that's going to take away from the ability of the team to go down a score is going to hurt. And to be able to protect the ball the way he has, you know, I continue to harp on that, you know, but that's just something that the Titans need, someone that's going to be able to take care of the ball. And to allude to the red zone numbers, you know, I'll say this. My last year in the NFL, I was in training camp with the New England Patriots. And this training camp and spring camp was something that I've never experienced before. Because the first, you know, we had about 6 weeks of OTAs. And in the first 3 to 4 weeks of OTAs, we didn't leave from the red zone area. Like, our whole practice was predicated upon low red zone, high red zone. And we didn't actually go to high red zone until, like, week 2.5. It was, like, the back end of the second week going into the third week. And I say that to say that I learned at that moment from, obviously, one of the great minds in the game and Bill Belichick that how important the red zone was, you know, and how difficult it is to make plays in that area. You have situations where the field is shortened. You know, the timing is thrown off. You got to get open a lot quicker. You got to understand the schemes a lot quicker because there's so much short space to work with in that area. And the ability for Ryan to go out and be in the top five with red zone percentage to make some completions and make some things happen in that area is true definition of why this Titans team is now 5-1 and continue to do some great things on offense.
Second best red zone team this year as well. So it's obviously there. But on the opposite side, there is a young gunner named Joe Burrow. So we're going to go to a break, but we need to get into him a little bit and discuss what he's been able to do. We'll be right back. Yeah. What you know about that, Nate?
You in your bag tonight.
Yes, sir. That's grown folk music right there, man.
They know nothing about
that. SOS band, just be good to me. Let me tell you something, Nate. When I hear that, it brings me back to days as a youngster going to Penn's Landing in Philly. They used to come and do free concerts at Penn's Landing. My pop, he used to load up his little cooler, his little igloo cooler. He had the beers. I had the sodas. And we'd go down there, me, him, and my brothers, and we'd just jam out the SOS band, man. Every time I hear that, boy, a big smile comes across my face.
A big vibe, isn't it?
That's that jamming music. And speaking of jamming, Joe Burrow, he was jamming last week, 406 passing yards, 3 touchdowns. That Bengals offense it's not bad. And even without Joe Mixon, they have Giovanni Bernard, and with him being a guy who has pass-catching skills, they're doing a lot of empty. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but no team is using empty more than the Bengals.
Definitely. You know, I looked at this tape, you know, from the Bengals. I looked at this Titans team, and I actually see this game as a trap game for the Titans. On paper, you see a 1-5 ball club with Cincinnati here. But the ability that they have and the confidence that's growing with this squad, you know, you can see it starting to protrude through their play. They're doing a lot of good things. They're young, obviously, but they're doing a lot of good things. You know, they have, you know, T. Higgins there that has been playing big. Tyler Boyd that's been, you know, a stronghold for that team in the absence of A.J. And now that A.J.'s back, you know, last week he definitely started making a lot of plays. So you have a young quarterback with a strong arm, great ability to read a defense and put the ball in a guy's hands to make plays. So this team is definitely dangerous for the Titans to be facing right now. Obviously, I think the Titans do have a different, unique ability to succeed on the offensive end facing this Cincinnati Bengals defense. But, you know, for this offense that's coming in and playing this Titans team, you know, I think the Titans are definitely going to have to be aware of Joe Burrow's ability and the unique weapons that he has around that are definitely making plays right now.
No doubt about it. And Burrow, that guy, I really like the way he processes stuff so quickly. And that's why you're able to have a lot of that catch and throw type of offense that they're doing. And I think this week it's going to be really crucial for them to stick to that because, I mean, they basically just went out and rounded up a crew to play offensive line because they don't have anybody. And that's going to be a problem. This will be a perfect opportunity for Clowney, for Beasley. Hey, listen, Derek Roberson, activate him. These guys, Harold Landry, they need to be able to get after the quarterback because the opportunity is going to be there. Jeffrey Simmons is going to be there. But the one way that they can neutralize that, as far as the Bengals are concerned, is to throw that ball quickly. And one of the ways that they do that is A.J. Green. And I've seen them move him across the formation. They'll go empty, and he'll be the number two right outside of Tyler Boyd, and he'll run those stop routes, just hooking up right there in the zone. Sometimes he'll run like a post stop. But then also they'll put him as outside as the number one, and that's when they go back shoulder. And they did that four times against the Browns. He had 13 targets, caught 7 of them for 82 yards. The week before, 11 targets, caught 8 of them for 96 yards. So it's safe to say that A.J. Brown is heating up, and that back shoulder is one of the ways that really allows him to, he and Joe Burrow to connect. So obviously, that being said, it's an observation, you know, from the one of the games that I watched. I wanted to ask Mike Vrabel about that. And here's what he had to say about A.J. Green and that back shoulder.
And then with the quick back shoulder throws that Burrow is hitting with A.J. Green, what's the coaching point for your corners to defend that?
Well, you know, we talk about playing the ball. You know, I mean, we talk about not looking back till you're in phase. And Malcolm had a close one. You saw, you know, it was an emphasis last week about, you know, playing the ball down the field. And I don't think he was in bad position. Unfortunately, I think what everybody and what I would like them to do and make it consistent throughout the league is that, you know, if you're not playing the football, that your margin for error goes way down. So I think that one, you have to play the football. Well, the other thing that comes up with that, Teron, is when you play the football and you look back, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of a hand that gets put on you and the ball is thrown, you know, on that back shoulder. So that's the game you play, you know, with them and those routes down the field. I think being challenged, finishing, you know, I think one thing that we talked about was being able to finish. Ward had one last week in the end zone, looked like a touchdown, and, you know, he continued to fight and finish through it and knock the football out, which I think A.J. Green thought it was a touchdown, and, you know, Ward finished. So, you know, that would be a huge emphasis.
Right there, finishing. And that's something I remember from the days when I was privileged enough to play football. My receiver coaches would always say, finish through the tuck. And DBs, they're always taught to fight through the tuck, to punch it out. Matter of fact, Darryl Green, there was an article on ESPN. Rob Domofsky did an article about Darryl Green and Jair Alexander, one of my favorite corners. But Darryl Green went into how he defended Randy Moss. Now, we're talking about a 6-inch differential, and, you know, Randy Moss is part deer, so he could jump out the world. But one thing that Darryl Green always did was wait until he would come down, and that's how he would punch it out. Vrabel just mentioned Denzel Ward doing that same thing. So I want to ask you, because you've been there and done that, what's the battle, like the back and forth, the game? How could you explain that with you and a DB fighting to finish all the way through the tuck?
Well, ironically enough, I'll go even a step further. My last year of playing when I was in Houston, we played against the New England Patriots, and there was approximately 3 or 4 plays throughout that game where I either could have had a touchdown wide open or definitely could have had a great play and would have made a play on the ball. But Malcolm Butler, ironically enough, was the guy that defended the plays, and each time Malcolm does an outstanding job of playing through the receiver's hands. As you said, you know, a lot of times when you go up as a receiver, especially when you're making a ball that's high, you're jumping for it, you catch the ball, and even if you tuck, you're still coming down. Yeah. So what they teach those guys to do is punch the ball through your hands when you're coming down, because obviously it's just force against force. And some guys are able to hold on to the ball. You know, you're able to, as a receiver, you're able to catch, tuck, and turn away sometimes. But a lot of times, just the initial flow of your body in itself puts you in an awkward position for a DB to play through your hands. Malcolm does a great job of that. Unfortunately, he hasn't been in position lately to do so, but I understand what Coach Vrabel means. You know, finishing the play, playing for the DB to play through the hands, and as a receiver, you know, as I stated, it's just difficult sometimes because a lot of these situations are predicated upon the throw and where it is and the body position of not only you as the receiver, but where the DB is. A lot of times, sometimes you're thrown into the DB, allowing him to make a play. So it's just a situation where, you know, that ball is in the air. There's so many things that are taught from a receiver standpoint to try to counteract what a defensive back is going to do, and also a defensive back to kind of try to counteract a throw that's coming from a great quarterback and the ability of a great receiver to make a play on the ball.
You've made a lot of those back shoulder catches. It seemed like, you know, your quarterbacks they like to target you that way. Was there a certain, and I know situationally, it's going to change according to how the DB's playing you or running with you, but did you, like, were you one where you would say, you know, like, aim at the back of my helmet, ear hole me? Or was there any particular way that you felt was best to approach that back shoulder?
Well, the key is when we go over those type of things in practice, you know, the key of running the back shoulder for a receiver is just to run. You know, a lot of guys, they get into a mode where they try to determine that throw for a quarterback, you know, and they run and they look back, or they may be having their hands on the defensive back. And it's a difficult situation for a quarterback to be in, because even in those moments, you don't want to throw a ball to the back, you know, back shoulder. And here it is, the defensive back is sitting on the back shoulder, mm-hmm. and it causes a personal foul, or pass interference on the offense, or anything that may be a turnover in that situation. So what we practice a lot of times is just for the receiver to run. It's not your job to determine whether the ball is going to come over the top or whether it's going to be a back shoulder throw. I know a lot of sometimes these things are scripted in the specific plays of the scheme, especially when you're dealing with low red zone or red zone area. A lot of times you may expect a back shoulder throw in those areas. But a lot of times, you know, we're taught as a receiver that it's your job to go. Your job is to run full speed and allow the quarterback to determine whether that ball is going to come over top or to play the back shoulder. And you just have to be prepared to play both. As a receiver, it makes it a lot easier if that ball is at the back ear hole of your head. It gives you an opportunity to adjust and still continue on to play down the field. But, you know, once again, this is just I think back shoulder throws are really just highlighting the receiver's ability to make unique plays on the ball, because you shouldn't be in a position ever to be expecting a back shoulder throw. It should be a play that you just make fluently from the throw that's determined from your quarterback.
AJ Green is one of the best at doing that. So watching him get back to that against the Browns is fun, because obviously, you know, you're always going to appreciate outstanding receiver play. And I remember back in the day, like when he first got to the league, he was murdering DBs with that. So it's good to see that come back around. I just want to see how these Titans DBs play the ball, because Ty Smith, he's listed as questionable. He's probably there from a height perspective. He's probably their tallest guy. But Malcolm Butler, as you mentioned, is probably their best when it comes to playing that. So I want to see how they go about matching up, because as we mentioned, AJ Green is moved around. The Titans move AJ Brown around too, but you know, that's a different conversation. So I'm looking forward to watching this matchup.
Definitely, it's going to be unique. I would love to see how they, you know, make adjustments from last week, because obviously they faced a huge passing attack with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it definitely paid dividends on the back end. So I would love to see the adjustments that they make this week and see if they'll try to attempt any more man-to-man close coverages, or any more tight zone coverages that will allow them to make a play on the ball. But I will say this too, you know, Moving into this week, you know, the size of these receivers are a lot different from the size of the receivers of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you have Chase Claypool, and Juju Schuster is a pretty, you know, solid-sized receiver. But you have height, and truly height, and speed, and size with these guys from the Cincinnati Bengals. A.J. Green is a very unique-sized guy, very tall. Obviously, T. Higgins has size on him, and Ty Boyd all have size. So even when you're looking at Malcolm Butler and you're looking at a lot of the other corners that may be in situations to make these plays on Sunday, it's going to be unique to see, to see how they make adjustments, the Titans make adjustments to try to contain the Cincinnati Bengals receivers.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you just got was a bonus matchup. We normally do the matchups in the final segment, and we'll do that. But we had to get into that. I mean, look, the guy's a former NFL receiver, so I had to, you know, see what I could pull out of him. I appreciate you on that, Nate. We're going to go to a break, and we'll come back with the actual matchups on offense and defense. And don't forget about things that make you go, Oh, we ain't done. Come on. I would hear this in the morning, Nick. Go to the mall. Give me a fresh pair of Reebok Classics. Some guest jeans. A polo shirt. And I'm ready to go. All right, let's get back to business. I was on a whole different vibe, but that old school music, man, it does the thing for me. I'm an old soul, I'm an old head, so, you know, excuse me for that. We have some matchups to get into, and we spoke about A.J. Green and the Bengals receivers against the Titans secondary, but what else is there that Titans defense needs to be concerned about? What's your matchup there outside of the receivers and secondary?
Well, obviously, you know, with the absence of Joe Mixon again this weekend due to a foot injury, you know, there will be someone stepping in, as you stated, with Giovanni Bernard that actually assists what Cincinnati does well, the passing game. He's such an asset in the passing game. And he still does a great job of running between the tackles. The Titans will definitely have to hold, be accountable for him. I think, you know, as you stated, you know, this is going to be definitely a team that's going to come in and understand that they have, you know, some opportunities in the pass game. And I'm pretty sure that they'll try to find a way to incorporate his ability both to run between the tackles and to also play big on third down and be a part of the pass game. They're going to find a way to incorporate him into this offense heavily this weekend. I'm expecting that, and I'm expecting the Titans to have to be prepared as such.
That's a good example of being able to kind of shift things when you have your main weapon out. I think Bernard, he's a really good pass-catching running back, so that's obviously something that's going to be a thing that the Titans need to be concerned with. For me on defense, the matchup, this team doesn't have their tackles, right? The Bengals, they don't have their starting tackles. I really believe it's time. You got guys in Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley, Harold Landry, and we'll see what happens with Derek Roberson. But these guys, it's about time to start getting home and bringing that quarterback down, and there's no better opportunity than this week going against backups on that outside. Now, we already talked about how they'll try to get that ball out faster, but you're not going to be able to go one step, three step pass game for a full 60 minutes. There are going to be times where you're going to have those longer development routes. There's going to be third and 10, third and 11. Look, they struggled last week against the Steelers in those third and long situations. This week, they have to feast on this backup talent at left and right tackle, without a doubt. This is the thing that these guys that Vic Beasley and Clowney got these contracts for, to be able to impact the quarterback. There's no better opportunity to do that than this week. So if you flip it to the other side, on offense, what's the matchup that you like, Titans against Bengals from an offensive perspective?
Well, I would definitely have to go, and you – I mean, any team that's going to face the Titans, obviously, is going, you're going to have to address the run game first. Mm-hmm. I think the ability for the Titans to get back to what they do best will be there to wear on the team in the first quarter and second quarter this week, because I feel like they will be able to sustain those drives against a little lesser of talent that the Cincinnati Bengals have. But I will also say, you know, as they've been playing well, I'm looking for Ryan to do even more in the passing game this week. I think, you know, once you start to get into the season and understanding when you're facing the Tennessee Titans offense, that physical and stopping the run game is going to be the first thing on everybody's list. I think this is going to give the passing game even more opportunities. And when you have AJ out there, when you have Corey playing the way he's playing, when you have Adam showing up on third down and Jonnu doing the things that he's doing, I think you can expect a big game from Ryan here to bounce back, take some shots on first and second down, establish the pass game to kind of lead this offense this Sunday and give them a little more opportunities in the run game. And I'm pretty sure that that's what they'll be expecting to do this Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals defense.
That's exactly what I'm looking to see this team do. Pass in the beginning to build that lead and then have Henry come in and be that closer. You know, that's what they're going to need to do. And I think there are favorable matchups on the outside with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown. So those are going to be opportunities for them to make things happen for sure. From a score perspective, do you have a prediction? I'll give you mine, actually. I'll start with mine. I think the Bengals offense can score points. I'm not going to veer away from that. But I think the Titans' offense could score more. So I'm going with a high-scoring game. I don't know what the over-under is, what the total is for this game, what that line is. But I would take the over. I'm going 42-28, Titans.
Wow, that's major. Now, I will say this. Throughout this season, I have been sitting home at the end of every game, including the last one, telling myself, Nate, stop doubting this Titans offense and their ability to score. This Titans offense has been putting up major numbers on the point on the scoreboard this year, so I can definitely expect a high scoring game. And also with, you know, Cincinnati's ability in their passing game and the lack of ability in the Titans secondary and their passing defense, I can definitely expect a high score here. So I'm definitely going to go probably 35-21. I'm going to go a little bit lower than you, but I'm definitely expecting a shootout, and the Titans will have to withhold in the end.
And here's the thing. You had mentioned earlier about a trap game, and it just hit me. I thought about something. I actually asked Coach Vrabel about that today, and he said one of the things that they did this week was show them how the Colts went up. I think it was 21-0, and the Bengals were able to fight back. And I thought that was really interesting that he showed them that, and especially after what I said with this team passing to get out to an early lead and then relying on Henry to shut the door. I think it's definitely a trap game, but I think the Titans come out prepared, and I think they come out with a fast start.
Well, definitely, you look at, as we've alluded to this whole season when we speak on this team's mentality, Coach Vrabel in itself, you know, his mentality is always going to be prepared. You know, but just for the young guys on the team, the guys that may be in a position to be looking at their season like, we played a good team, we lost last week, but we'll bounce back this week, and not be fully prepared mentally and physically to go out and do your job. You know, you're going to have situations like that and occasional guys like that. But as a team, collective whole, I'm definitely expecting this team to be prepared and understand that, you know, this is a possible trap game for them and that they can't take this team lightly. Cincinnati is definitely lower end of the record, but what they've been putting on film and these young guys' ability to fight until that clock is set zeros, you know, I think is definitely showing through the film, and you have to be accountable as an opponent against them, even if your record is good, to know that you're not just dealing with a sorry team. You're dealing with a young team that's finding their way through, and they won't stop playing until that game is over.
No doubt about it. Before we get out of here, we have to address something, you know, because every week there are things that what do they do, man?
Things that make you go.
Yeah. Things that make me go, It hit me last night, Nate, watching that game, because I saw something that took me back to the Cowboys game and, you know, how they just sat there and let Andy Dalton get walloped and didn't do a thing about it. And that obviously made me go, hmm. But the thing that made me go, mm-hmm, was the way the Panthers responded to Teddy B getting hit like that. I really appreciated them stepping up and making it known that, hey, you're not going to hit my quarterback that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those situations, you know, in themselves, it kind of – football kind of goes out the window. And, I mean, especially you look at that position in itself, it's difficult to get a gunslinger back there that's comfortable in the NFL to do his job. I don't care if he's a backup. I don't care if your backup was a 10-year starter. It's difficult to get a guy that's in there that's going to do right. And when you get a guy, I mean, guys on the other team taking cheap shots or putting that guy in a position to be hurt unnecessarily, it has to be addressed. You know, it definitely makes me reflect on the situation when we played Cleveland Browns 1 year at home. And ironically enough, the guy that hit Jake Locker running into the end zone, it was kind of a cheap shot. The guy that hit him was roommates with my little cousin at Iowa. And we kind of got into it. And after the game, my cousin called me. He said, hey, man, he just wants you to know he didn't mean no harm. I said, hell, don't call me about no mess on no field. But, like, I get it. Like, you got to protect your guy. You got to make sure that, you know, the team is playing respectful ball. Everything is clean. There's no dirty shots. And at the moment that you feel that something's going to go on, it's going to be addressed, you know. And I understood what happened last night with the Panthers addressing Teddy B. And I was kind of disappointed in the way that the Cowboys addressed Andy Dalton's situation. There's no way that he should have been on that ground rolling around like that by himself and nobody taking action. I'm not telling nobody. Don't get me wrong. I know this is already a violent and gladiator sport, but you know, I'm not looking for nobody to go get any weapons and have a full-on war, but you definitely have to address those issues when those things happen.
I'll tell you what, I spent some time in Baltimore covering the Ravens when they had a guy that you also saw when you were in Tampa, and that's Ryan Jensen. And I tell you, if if he was on that field and that happened to his quarterback, they probably would have had to arrest him. So fortunately for his sake, you know, that didn't happen. That's one of the most goonish type of players in the league, man. Ryan Jensen is no joke. But on that note, I appreciate each of you for tuning in. It's been great having this opportunity this past hour to talk shop. Nate, it's always a pleasure, man. You make it happen, man. We're going to keep this thing going.
TD, man, you already know what it is. You do it. You do your thing on your time, and you do a great time doing it, man. I appreciate the time as always, and looking forward to next week.
For sure. We'll be back next week. Kenny will be back there making it happen, keeping those music bumps. So stay tuned. God bless. Good night.